Welcome to your Monday lunch break. It's time to shake off the weekend and get this work in with a new WNHH radio show called Work It Out. Join me, Mercy Quay, for conversations on what we do for work, how we do work, and how it's actually working for us. I want to know how my guests got from there to here and what's keeping them motivated to move. I want to know the secrets to success. After working as everything from a reporter to a barista, from a call center to communications, I'm interested in learning how successful people in our state carved out their path and stayed on it. Today's guest is a man everyone in New Haven knows very well. Back in the day, he used to do a news show or news from the compost pile. Is that right? And now he's here, the editor of the New Haven Independent, who needs no further introduction other than the utterance of his name, Paul Bass. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank Mercy. It is such a pleasure and an honor to be your first guest on your new show on WNHH.
And thank you for helping me kick it off. This whole radio thing is new to me, so thank you for agreeing to kind of show me the ropes. So a lot of people in New Haven know your story. A lot of people don't know your story. I feel like you and I met maybe back in 2009.
When you were in high school.
When I was in high school. Well, no, actually, I was in college at the time. I was okay. In college, yeah. I was looking for an internship. But even then, I don't know that I fully knew your story. But I did know New Haven Independent as one of the two major, well, the major news station, newspaper in the city. Can you tell me how you got here? How did it come about?
New Haven Independent started in 2005. Mm-hmm. And that was when news was just beginning to migrate to the web. Mm. Most people still didn't get their news from the internet. I had been a reporter in New Haven since 1980, working for various media outlets. Mm-hmm. I was taking a year off from my job at the New Haven Advocate, which was a former alternative weekly where I'd worked for 15 years. I took a year off to write a book. I really didn't want to go back.
You wrote a book?
Yeah, on the Black Panthers and a murder in New Haven called Murder in the Model City. I wrote with a friend Doug
Ray. Right, yeah.
And I'd written a lot about it over the years, this case where New Haven closed down and radicals from around the country came here saying they're going to burn down the city. And there was a trial of two Black Panthers were on trial in the murder of one of their own members. And over the years, I'd found a lot of secrets about that, about how Yale kind of conspired with the police and the Black Panthers themselves to stop the Nixon administration from fomenting a big riot here or having what happened 4 days later at Kent State where protesters got shot to death. And also the man who committed the murder and then turned his life around, Warren Kimbrough, kind of told his story there. And also the intelligence division in New Haven, which was secretly illegally wiretapping people. The people there gave me some new information
going
on. And we found the guy who was the spy who still is in New Haven, who gave the police all their information, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't want to go back because big corporations were buying up all local media in the 80s, 90s, and aughts. And they even bought the alternative weeklies. So it's not like they told us you can't write something mouthy or obnoxious or against the establishment. They just made it boring. They disinvested and they sent
you to
human resources, seminars, and just, you know, like, I just didn't want to go back. And I was thinking, what could I do? And I was online procrastinating on my book, and I started seeing these blogs, and like a lot of reporters, I was snobby about blogs. I said, they don't report, they sit in their pajamas, although I like pajamas. But anyway, people were sitting in their pajamas, and they would take stories that real reporters wrote and link to them. But I noticed something else happening on this blog in New Jersey. I'm not sure how I found it, but it was called BaristaNet, and it wasn't like a traditional news organization, but what it was it was online, and someone wrote in, there's a fire drill at the high school in Montclair. So then another couple minutes, someone else writes in, yeah, all the kids are outside. It's really gets me mad about how things have changed in our day. There was more respect for rules. And then somebody else wrote in, you're just saying that because now there are Black and brown kids at the school. We build fire alarms all the time. And then someone else wrote in about a half hour later, we're back inside and I'm a teacher there. And the real issue is we can't breathe well in the school because they rebuilt it and there are all these allergens. So it's going on and on. And then at the end, someone wrote, I'm new to the town. This is interesting. When's the next Board of Ed meeting? I said, holy cow. Journalism is changing. We would write like a story, maybe get one letter to the editor a week later.
Yeah.
And a few people would read it. Here, the people were part of the news being developed in real time online. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, what if we did that with local news? Because I felt like local news was drying up. You know, when I came to New Haven in 1978 to go to college, there were two daily newspapers owned by the same company, the Register and Journal Courier. They eventually merged when they were bought by a big corporation with junk bonds. And they not only closed one of the dailies, but they got rid of two-thirds of the people at the other. They had a monopoly. And this happened in every city in the country, just about. And they bought up the local alternative weekly. There were five radio local news outlets. There were now zero. All you had were people who used feeds from out of state. So where was the local news? So I'm thinking, I just spent 15 years in an alt-weekly where our opinions matter. And I say, like, our opinions don't matter anymore because on the internet, everyone's got an opinion, including people who know more than we do and some mm-hmm. people don't. Mm-hmm. But what's really missing is the reporting. Can this be brought onto the web and do old-fashioned journalism in a new way? Mm-hmm. So I got, and then I was also following some debates online, this blog by a guy named Jay Rosen, who was a media pioneer. And he, somebody wrote, what if now the old business model journalism doesn't work anymore? Journalism used to be paid for local journalism by ads, so that if you wrote a story about a zoning board, you don't really know how many people bought them. The only game in town for someone who had a restaurant or a dry cleaners or a clothing store was to advertise there or a nightclub. But now it didn't make sense to, because they could so much more efficiently reach people for so much less money directly mm-hmm. through the web. What if we started seeing journalism as a public utility that you need? Democracy needs it the way we need electricity or water. Mm-hmm. So I decided, why not try a nonprofit model? And I got some, I thought maybe I would just do a story a day and link to other stories mm-hmm. and let citizens become part of the debate and get some nonprofit money. I actually got nonprofit funding where I could do it for a living and I freelance. But it soon developed that people just wanted that news reporting. We had to show them how to read on the internet. People don't know this now, but I used to have to sit in city government office and think, here's how you can see your picture where I just took it, and here's how you can see your article. And all these debates started that started affecting city government. But more importantly, people, I started being able to hire reporters, getting the money, pay them health insurance and salaries. And all of a sudden, we started just showing up at the Board of Ed and finding out that taking attendance, because no one was coming to the Board of Ed. You're right. Not going to believe this. No one went to the Board of Ed anymore.
Not even the register.
No one.
Really?
And they, it turned out that Board of Ed members weren't going to the Board of Ed. They had worse attendance than the people being thrown out of Wilbur Cross for truancy. So once we took attendance, they all started showing up, and then other reporters started showing up.
Yeah, I mean, so I think what you're discussing here, this is sort of like a romantic thing for me, talking about watchdog journalism and competition creating quality in one reporting, but
zoning
also
board.
Exactly.
And zoning board was heaven for us. No one had gone to zoning board for years. They were doing stuff in violation of the Freedom of Information Act. Mm-hmm. We just started showing up and we started talking about it. Board of Aldermen committees, but also neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. You know, we said, why not have high journalistic standards, but also be like very high touched in the neighborhood, and you're part of this community. And the readers took us to so many great places. And because we were 501c3 nonprofit, we couldn't endorse candidates, which is fine with me. Right. I've had enough endorsements in my life. I didn't care anymore telling people to vote for, but somewhere the candidates stand. And then the media, the technology changed. There was no YouTube when we started. All of a sudden, we started taking videos.
What's weird about that is you forget the timeline when YouTube comes around.
So we started bringing our own cameras, which reporters never did. We had to learn how to do it. And then you could update stories as the day went on. And people started following, like when they arrested the cops for corruption, the FBI. We put it right up there, what was in the, like an hour later. And everyone knew in the city. And then they were adding stuff as the night went on. And then with the video, I remember I was arguing about where we're going to ride bikes. Bikes started becoming big in the city. And someone started yelling at me one day not to ride my bike in the street. And I videoed her, and there was this whole argument about it. I put the video up, and 80 people wrote in with doing their own research about how the state rule book for driving and the municipal code had different rules about where bikes should be. And there were actually change from that and discussion about where bikes should be in community. And it led to a whole citywide traffic calming movement through what we did. And this grew into a regular news source. Couldn't be, there's no such thing as a paper record anymore, if there ever was. Mm-hmm, you need multiple media outlets. But all of a sudden, we had multiple reporting and media outlets in town again. And then we grew to add a Valley edition, and then a Brantford edition came first. And then we also started a radio station 2 years ago with, and all this like podcasting started, because I put audio on your seat. We started doing these true vote polls in real time, where you vote on an issue rather than a person. Like where you should be buildings, how high, or you know, what you're going to spot. And people can watch in real time as they each vote with the pie charts. And it's just so much fun, because I'm an old school journalist. I'm 57 years old. I've been doing this since the 70s. And to be doing it in this new way was so much fun.
And it sounds like you adapted really early on and continue to with the polls, Facebook Live, which we're right now on, right? Did you find it difficult at all to jump in?
It was so much fun. Like, I was always the technophobe.
Okay.
I'm bad at technology. When I was at The Advocate, I'd be scared, like, if I press this button, will it blow up? And the tools became so easy, Mercy, and that's what was so thrilling. Mm-hmm. Like, it took only 10 minutes for my webmaster to teach me how to post on The Independent. And then I never knew I could take pictures, and they were pretty lousy for the first bunch of years. But, you know, it got better. We hired people on our staff who were good photographers. How to put photos up and crop them, and then you could take your videos and edit them. Even I could do that.
I mean,
I'm like the last frontier. And that could go on your site, and you could tell a story differently every way. My most fun is something called the P Clear story. That's just from the coding, because I even learned the coding. Mm-hmm. And where you could tell a story different depending on what the story is like based on all the options with the technology now. So if you go to a parade or a protest march, sometimes we'll just pick seven photos and write to those photos as though you're along instead of a block of text in a newspaper. Other times you're going to go text heavy, the investigation of foreclosures by the Water Pollution Control Authority was one of our first investigations before the mortgage crisis hit. We were on top of it by going to a foreclosure every week and looking who was really doing it, what the impacts were. And you can link. The linking was huge. That was also something new. Mm-hmm. We're using links to help broaden and how you can use moderated discussion threads to have intelligent discussion that's more diverse than ever. And the other thing that happened was I found that the journalism could be more in touch with a diverse audience than ever before.
Right.
So early on when we did The Independent, these two teenagers were killed in New Haven by stray bullets.
Yeah.
13-year-old Justice Suggs and Joanna Call, who I think was also 12 or 13, and Dixwell on the Hill. And within, just from doing that reporting and because of what we'd built up, we had people from the suburbs who never go into urban neighborhoods and people living in the urban neighborhoods talking together the way they never would in real life about how do you address urban violence and where's the responsibility and where are the solutions. And also as a community coming together saying we're so sad the kids died. That to me was a kind of journalism that was so much different where our opinions mattered less than ever before, which was fine. You could tell stories in new ways and you could be in so much closer touch with the people formerly known as the audience. That's what we started calling them in the industry. And so when I started as a nonprofit model, we were the second in the country. We didn't know there was also one in San Diego. Since then, there have been over 100 experiments, of which there are at least 10 that are pretty ongoing. 12 years later, they bring us together for conferences every year or two at the Knight Foundation. And we're the only small city where you actually have an ongoing, where it's one of the main daily news sources where people get health insurance and a salary to do professional journalism. But there are successful ones in San Diego and New Orleans, in Minneapolis. And Texas Tribune is the biggie now that started about 5-6 years ago.
So I guess, so my big thing is, you know, I think it makes sense that when you take journalism out of the traditional medium from print and put it online, you make it really easy for the reader to interact with you, but then also interact with each other. Unless you're a big corporation.
I noticed that everything that the chains do is broken on the web. Because they do is they try to take the old model journalism and slap it on a web page. And they're always thinking of how to gin up numbers. So, because in the old days, they sold ads based on their circulation. Mm-hmm. And an interesting experiment they took with a company called Digital First that owned the Register and had a chain that went bankrupt twice. And it was a well-meaning experiment. They said, okay, we can't compete for ads like the old ways. So instead of trying to have 100,000 print circulation and say you can buy the ad based on cost per thousand, let's have 10 times as many eyeballs for web stories, and then we'll just charge 10 times as much and make as much money, which was an interesting experiment.
It was an interesting experiment.
But the flaw in that experiment was A, that's not how people bought things anymore. Mm-hmm. B, the way you got those eyeballs was to gin up search engine optimization, try to get people to click in California on a story about Lindsay Lohan that might be an AP that's running in New Haven.
Yep.
But those aren't people who live here or are going to buy things based on that.
Sure.
And in fact, it didn't work, though it was well-meaning. And my feeling is that local journalism might need to be nonprofit, that it needs to be a philanthropic exercise that's funded by people who have that interest, that that's what you need for the for an ongoing democracy. And that, but I could be wrong, because all these experiments in different cities take different forms. But I've yet to see one where you could pay more than one salary with a for-profit model and have that salary be more than just chasing ads and maybe just putting the police press releases. So, whereas I see some great, a lot of failures, but a lot of great successes in not-for-profit journalism in the country now.
Yeah, what we're seeing with a lot of like the traditional media is adopting but not adapting.
Right, it's not really relevant.
Right,
and also, they never moderated the debates, so they became sewers. So comments became, and sometimes when we've screwed up, they have on our side too, but we work really hard. We read every comment before it goes up because we want there to be diverse. And at first, I had trouble.
I want to just say that again. Paul Bass reads every comment.
Not me or someone at The Independent.
Someone at The Independent.
And we've done that since the start, but we still screwed up sometimes that things got through because we weren't paying careful enough attention. We stopped it for a while so we could recalibrate and people really missed it. But it's such a sewer and so damaging democracy what happens with these big chains that just let them up first without looking at them because they don't want to spend the money to vet them. And they're always thinking scale. And it gets dominated by, in the case of New Haven, WTNH registered by Klansmen from East Haven, you know, who basically shut everybody else out. But I had trouble rejecting comments at first because I was worried. I didn't want to subtly not putting comments in agree with by finding an excuse or not have, I always felt like if they criticize me or John DeStefano, who was the mayor, then they should be able to say almost anything they want because we're supposed to take it the most.
Right,
and I realized
that
helped pollute the whole site because then there was this idea you could kind of make up things about people or be nasty.
Right.
So I had to finally embrace my inner China censor in that I had to say, okay, I believe I'm really dedicated to hearing different points of view, but I'm not going to let this be a sewer. This isn't government where you have a right to say whatever you want almost except for fire and a crowd of theory. This is our living room. If you want to come in our living room, you can have any point of view you want. We encourage it, but you can't make up things about people. You can't swear at them. You can't tell them to go. You can't tell them to go do A, B, or C because you don't like them. And you just can't be nasty.
Right. I mean, we're talking. So is that how your comment policy came along?
Yeah.
Because we're talking about people from New Haven reading about things about
New
Haven.
So what happened?
The passion
comes up. We stopped caring about getting 100 comments for story, which at first was exciting. We'd rather have 8 to 10 that are really interesting. And I would argue we have the most civil, even though there's some dumb comments, mm-hmm. we have the most civil and productive and diverse comment policy. So early on, I remember African-American women telling me, like, we're a little nervous to post because some of these guys are just jumping on us for being black. Every time, we don't print these, the rest of it, you know, things like thin the herd every time a black person gets arrested for a crime, or now we need forced abortion. We never had that. But, you know, it was kind of subtle. And then we decided we're going to clamp down so everyone feels comfortable to be here. And there were a few kind of East Haven Klans people we've banned, and we banned a bunch of people. And stalking people. But in general, we got so much more of a diverse readership. And, you know, the commentary is a little more conservative and anti whoever's doing stuff than the general population, because mm-hmm. that's who's motivated to comment.
Right.
But that's fine. It keeps
right.
it honest. It keeps us accountable, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, you often see in the county comment, as last weekend, there was even a case where someone says, you know, I think you were biased in how you did that in that headline. That photo is really wrong. And we'll stop and think, hey, you're right. We changed it.
Oh,
and
so
we'll
the, comments
in the comments
impact or
well, like last
the
week,
way.
Ross Lee said, you know, that was a really racist photo you had of Shirlene Poindexter was running for union president because she has her finger and she's really angry at and a white guy standing there looking worried. And that's putting in the idea that black women are scary if they're assertive. Now, that story happened to have been edited by a black woman, and she and I both knew that, in fact, the white guy in the story enjoys Shirlene Poindexter, wasn't being chewed out by him, and mm-hmm. that this was, we felt it was showing her being lively and passionate
right,
and
right.
good. But that to someone who doesn't have inside knowledge, I thought the commenter was completely right,
mm-hmm.
that it fed into stereotypes and got in the way of telling the story.
Mm.
So I wrote in, I think you're right. We changed it. But I wanted to make sure that people knew we had changed it.
Yeah.
So I make sure to say in the comment, you changed it. But it happened very early on when I had to get used to this. In the first months of the Independent, there was a mayoral debate. And John DeStefano was the mayor. And I wrote a headline that was pretty tough on him. And within, it was 10 at night, and 15 minutes later, someone posted a comment saying, I was about to go to bed. He said, you know, I don't like John DeStefano at all, but you were so unfair to him, that headline. I stopped. I thought, you're completely right. I just changed the headline. I say, this is great.
Yeah.
We're being held accountable. People feel invested. The people who are angry at us, I said, hey, it's the most, are actually the most invested in the publication because they want us to be better.
Right.
And there's nothing at stake for us to be wrong. As long as we're honest and trying our hardest to do well and do right, we benefit. We don't lose anything in saying you're right. Or if we think they're wrong, to listening to them and seeing why they think that and how we could do better. And that we don't have to win anything as journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like before, journalism had become such an elite fourth estate that didn't have much contact directly. People did most of the stories on the phone, kind of talked only to people in power and kind of wanted mm-hmm. to determine who was going to get elected and what bills got passed. They were too self-important and had too much at stake to be criticized or improved. And I really love the new media. I love how it gets, in so many ways, we do our jobs better. There's one way we do our job worse, but in all other ways, we really do our job better.
So you love the new media, and I love that you joined me today on my first show here. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay on WNHH Radio, broadcasting live on, is it 103.5? And on NewHavenIndependent.org and Facebook
live
as well. Yep,
and in Facebook Live.
There it is. Today's guest is Paul Bass, talking to us about how he started the New Haven Independent and how he sort of got his feet wet in the field of journalism. I kind of want to go back to the start. I also know that you, and actually I learned this out, I figured this out and learned this about you last week for the first time. You also had a little stunt in radio.
Yeah, well, I've been a reporter in New Haven since 80. And, from in the mid-90s, I also co-hosted a regular radio show on WELI, a daily show with a guy named Tom Scott, who was really the early Tea Party. He was a state senator.
Yeah.
He came within 1% of beating Rosa DeLauro in her first race for Congress. And he was a hardcore Pat Buchanan, what would now be a Donald Trump guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I had a daily show on ELI where we argued left-right. I was much more left-wing in those days. And you know, I was an alternative journalist at the New Haven Advocate. And we just went at it. And the reason I did that when they asked me was, right-wingers are dominating talk radio as they do today. And I always felt like, you know, lefties and liberals are such wimps. They just let them have the turf.
Super
passive.
Not
that we should be obnoxious like them. And I had to learn there not to be so obnoxious because I was at first. But just like be proud of what you stand for
right.
and mix it up. And he and I became great friends because every day we would just really argue it out. And people listened to the show closely, and we went so much more to left and right than what you heard on radio.
Yeah.
But you know, at the end, I only did it. The next year I stopped because I didn't have enough time. I was already working part-time in the office. I had a young child. Mm-hmm. I was bringing away two at that point, and I wanted to be home half-time, and I didn't feel I had enough time to do my reporting well enough. I was more interested in what I can learn reporting mm-hmm. than spending too much time bloviating with opinions on
right.
the radio.
Right. So the show, as I develop it out and as I figure out where we're going to go with it, again, the title is Work It Out. I really want to dive into what brought people to the place they were. And if there was any point that you decided this is where I'm going to go as opposed to clown school.
Since I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a reporter.
Oh.
And I put out a little newspaper in my neighborhood. I just loved it. I'm shy. I'm socially awkward. But I love asking people questions and I love to write. Yeah. And I love to get feedback. I remember when I was 8 years old, my mother was dying of brain cancer, and they used to have these terrible rules at hospitals that kids under 12 couldn't go in to see them. And it was her last day. I didn't know it was her last day being alive, and they didn't let me in. I was bringing her my latest newspaper. So I interviewed the nurses about how the hospital worked. And I realized since that day, and maybe it's a fault, like how you relate to the world, but that's sort of, if something's emotional or important to me, I just kind of like to write about it, find about it. And I feel like being a reporter is a passport. Or in any situation you're in, you could ask anybody about anything and find out information and share it. And, you know, I worked at student publications. And then in high school, I started working for Gannett Daily while I was in high school in White Plains, New York. Mm-hmm. And I came to New Haven for college and I wrote for the Register during college and then the New Haven Advocate. And I love New Haven so much. It's such a great news town that I settled here.
Did reporting ever at any point turn you off? Did you at any point, I hear that you've wanted to do this since you were eight. Was it difficult to break in? We all know.
I got to know the editors at the Gannett paper because when I had a sports newspaper in sixth grade, and I walked in, I just met the editor who ended up being the editor for a long time, mm-hmm. and he always said, "Come back a little later, we'll get you started." And so I got to start covering local news in high school, which was I was in heaven. I sometimes still have like dreams about what a pure moment that was to be in a grown up newsroom and just cover news stories. And then because I was a paper boy before I was a reporter, I used to deliver the paper to doors and then to see the articles.
This is
come
really
out.
A romantic story.
It was. I was so excited. I couldn't think of anything more exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think some of the changes were when I was in college and I was kind of an idiot leftist in college. I kind of wanted to do more radical journalism. And then when I joined the alternative press rather than the straight press, I saw how it was a weakness of people in alternative press didn't have the straight press background where you actually had to call back cops five times to get the facts straight.
Yeah.
Then alternatives changed. Journalism, as it became more successful and came above ground, actually became much more independent and fact-oriented too. But it brought in those kind of magazine writing. And because when I was in college, I got to study with a guy named John Hersey, mm-hmm. who was a famous novelist and nonfiction writer. And he taught me a lot about form and structure and depth in writing. And I did kind of change a little bit what I wanted then. And by working Alternative Weekly and doing magazine journalism, I got to go more in depth. I do think when I was talking earlier, it's about one weakness about the new journalism. It's harder. It's must do the depth unless you do it horizontally, right. By which I mean lots of small stories on the same subject that we would go 50 weeks in a row to a foreclosure and find an angle and make it build up over time as opposed to do the one, you know, 10,000 word story on foreclosures.
Right. Yeah. So I think a lot of people, I mean, if we even were going to stick to the field of reporting, the field of journalism, I want this show to kind of speak to the person trying to, you know, strike out on their own, whether that's a millennial who wants to switch careers or has a side gig and trying to pick up a, you know, make that side gig their main gig. Do you have any advice as it pertains to journalism and reporting? It seems like while it may have seemed like an uphill battle for other people, I mean, for me, breaking into reporting seemed kind of difficult, but it sounds like it was sort of easy to you. So do you have any advice?
I don't know about easy. You have to make your own opportunities.
Right,
I'm not a corporate guy.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't fit in corporate newsrooms. So
the decision was easy for you.
I had to make my own opportunities. Mm-hmm. Like in the 80s, I helped co-found a weekly paper called The Independent, which was for profit. I think you have to be more and more entrepreneurial than the old days. In the old days, in every field, not just journalism, people went to work for a company and often you worked there your whole life and rose to the ranks. That ain't happening anymore for a number of reasons, one of which is that industries are much more dynamic. There's the mm-hmm. process of creative destruction where companies just reinvent themselves all the time or go out of business and want to support them. And the way the industry works just changes so quickly. And companies have no loyalty to the people anymore. Mm-hmm. So you have to be ready. Think of all things you've done already, Mercy, and you're still in your 20s, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, most people, that wasn't true in the old days. So my advice is be ready to be flexible, be entrepreneurial, but also find a good newsroom. Don't worry about status. Mm-hmm. Think about where there are people doing good journalism, whether it's an old-fashioned corporate newsroom or whether it's a small weekly or whether it's an online startup, but go where they care about the work. Because the work, more than ever, it always mattered more, and that's what John Hersey taught me. It's the work. It's not how big a shot, because he'd have all these students who were going to go on to big places, and I told them I'm not. I love New Haven. He said, what's more important is the work, not where you do it. And second of all, be flexible and change with the technology, and also and how, where you find audiences, but also just be ready to start your own thing if you need to.
Yeah, yeah. And when you started your own thing here, I mean, we talk about everyone loving the idea of being able to interact with the news. Did you ever find it possible, or did you ever find it to be the case that you just had people saying, this is wrong? I mean, I hear in the comment section, they told you you were wrong. What were the sort of uphill battles that you faced with the community specifically? I mean, you're I call you a New Haven guy now, right? But you weren't always a New Haven guy when you started out here. So how did you find it kind of integrating into New Haven and covering
stories
here? New
Haven is the easiest city to integrate as journalists because it's small enough that you like, I met the mayor one of my first weeks here.
Yeah.
And like, and when I walked in for the register, I had the police chief and the mayor. I got stories from them, you know, in 1980, I was a junior, sophomore, junior year. And then, so it's a small enough city that you get your arms around it quickly and meet the key people. But it's a big enough city where it's so interesting that you never run out of great stories.
Yeah.
And then it's also a city with such incredible history of trying to address social problems and sometimes failing spectacularly, sometimes succeeding, but where every student's a walking 501c3 trying to save the world, but also planners and people have been planned on, have this whole decades-long process of trying to figure out what works and not, that every time you do a story, it goes back, unspools over decades of humanity search and society search for how you make a better world.
Yeah.
So it's this incredible city to break into, get your arms around, but never run out of good stuff to write about.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I'm New Haven born and raised, and you know, I am still in my 20s, and that's how I feel about New Haven. Everything about it is great. I mean, I will go to any city and tell the people there, move to New Haven, because we got it. We got it better. My last question as we wrap up here is, what gets you worked up? Right, you've been doing this since the 80s. What gets you worked up in what you're doing now?
A good story.
A good story? Just, that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for listening. Thank you for joining me, Paul.
Thank you, Mercy.
Today.
Good luck with your new show. Thanks
I appreciate
for doing
it. What do you think about the show?
I think it's great. It's going to work out big time.
It's going to work out? Is that work with an E?
It's going to be W-E-R-K out big time.
All right. Awesome. And we hope to have you join us next time. You've been listening to Work It Out with Mercy Quay. Thanks.